Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Thursday, June 4th. I'm Sarith Hawk. If it comes to fruition, Fresno's Southeast Development Area, or SEDA, could bring thousands of new homes to Fresno. But the project has faced significant pushback from many residents.
We just got to continue to do the things that help us to grow, to build. And when we stop growing, we die as a city.
We have an extended conversation with Fresno Mayor Jerry Dyer about why he supports the SEDA project and why he thinks it's best for Fresno. But first, these headlines. A suspect is dead after taking multiple hostages and threatening to blow up a building in downtown Bakersfield. KVPR's Israel Cardona Hernandez reports on the situation that lasted 15 hours and ended with a standoff with the FBI.
At around 1:30 p.m. on Tuesday, the suspect took 10 people hostage at a Chase Bank building downtown. He tied five of them up. And in a press conference on Wednesday, Bakersfield Assistant Chief Jeremy Blackmore said the suspect had actually strapped explosives to them.
The suspect advised he had explosives attached to his person, which our personnel could see as well. He also told law enforcement that additional explosives had been attached to some of the hostages.
The suspect was identified as Anthony Scott Serlis Harris, a registered sex offender who was dishonorably discharged from the Army. Law enforcement negotiated with him overnight and successfully freed two of the hostages. At around 4:30 a.m., the FBI shot and killed Serlis Harris.
We're incredibly relieved to report that all of the hostages that were involved have been safely recovered and reunited with their families.
Serlis Harris's motives are still not known, but he requested documents from previous legal cases during negotiations. For KVPR News, I'm Israel Cardona Hernandez.
The 10 employees who were held hostage in that Bakersfield office building were all employees of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools. All were uninjured despite being barricaded inside the building. In a statement, County Superintendent John Mendeburu said he was relieved there were no injuries and that the employees who went through the ordeal were extraordinary. California's newly drawn congressional districts were put to the test during Tuesday's primary election. Voters last year approved of redrawing the state's congressional maps to create five more Democratic-leaning U.S. House seats. But Democrats have long worried about the possibility of a shutdown in one of the redrawn districts, just as almost happened in the governor's race. California's redistricting was proposed in response to Texas redrawing its maps to gain Republican seats. The battle between the states kicked off a redistricting war across the country. Ballots are still being counted, meanwhile, in most races from Tuesday's primary election. One of those is Congressional District 22, which covers western Fresno County down to Bakersfield and includes much of Kings and Tulare counties. The Associated Press has called that Republican incumbent David Valadao will advance to the general election in November. But with only 55% of ballots counted so far, it's still too early to say which Democratic rival, Jasmine Baines or Randy Villegas, will face off against him. The Fresno State Library has been awarded a grant to help expand an archive of LGBTQ+ historical materials. The $126,000 sum will fund the collection in the Central Valley Rainbow Archives, which documents local LGBTQ+ history. The grant will also provide workshops for students and training. The archives will be available to the public.
Public radio is now 100% community supported. Federal funding is gone and isn't likely to come back. That means you have the opportunity to help keep KVPR's trusted and informative coverage on the air. Do your part today and become a new monthly member. We're all in this together. Join the movement and help sustain public radio's service. Donate at kvpr.org.
And now to our main story. A proposed housing and mixed-use development is poised to shape Fresno's future growth, but it faces a high level of public scrutiny before it can get there. The Southeast Development Area, or SEDA project, is a 9,000-acre, 45,000-home development planned for just outside the city's limits. In the past few years, it's become a pillar of Fresno Mayor Jerry Dyer's administration. But the project has a lot of unanswered questions.
What are the upfront costs to do any type of the infrastructure in the South SEDA, the Southeast Development Area? How long would it take to get that paid back? Who pays for it?
I sat down with Mayor Dyer at the KVPR studios to discuss SEDA. He says he's focused on the initial phase of the project, a smaller footprint he called South SEDA. Those are details he plans to present to the Fresno City Council this August. But within the last 6 months, the project has garnered a wave of public backlash. That included hundreds of community members filling City Hall chambers to capacity at a December meeting, plus revelations about text messages Dyer sent to discourage Fresno Unified trustees from voting against the project, and two Fresno school districts that have since voted against the build-out.
We just got to be smart, got to be fiscally conservative. We got to keep our reserve where it is. We have the highest credit rating in our history. We need to make good, smart choices on how we spend money, and that will continue to be the case.
After years with the project in limbo and mounting questions over the impact of urban sprawl in the city, the mayor addressed his critics about why he thinks pushing forward is in the city's best interest.
Well, first off, the environmental impact report was not initiated during my time as the mayor, my administration. It was actually back in 2019, I believe, is when the city council gave direction to the administration or to the staff to initiate the environmental impact report for SEDA. So when I came in, I inherited that process. Now, it got delayed for a period of time because of COVID and a number of other things, but the study was 100% funded by the Housing and Community Development at the state level, $625,000. So at some point, we had to bring that environmental impact report before the council for approval or give the money back to the state of California, which I don't like to do. So I had two options, give the money back, which money we had already spent, by the way, or to bring the environmental impact report to the council, which is what we chose to do. But I will say along the way, we did change, even in the South SEDA. The southern portion of the Southeast Development Area, we were looking at a mixed development between the research and development and multifamily, single family homes. But in meeting with certain council members, community groups, it felt like there was more support to just make that 100% a consolidated business plan, all 1,547 acres, and then to move the housing separate, just north of Jensen. And one of the council members didn't want students crossing Jensen Avenue. So we accommodated that move, that plan, and that's the plan we're studying today.
So you're building, you're adjusting the plan.
Sure.
You inherited something that was already in motion,
right,
and you're adjusting to it. You know, what people are saying, what a lot of people said during that council meeting was, you know, this is another example of Fresno's suburban sprawl, the
right,
long history that we've had of it, sending resources to the fringes at the expense of growth and development in our city's core. Do you think that's a fair criticism?
Well, I understand the perspective based on the city of Fresno's history of having some urban sprawl. If you go back in time, you'll look and see that the 41 freeway and the 168 were built out to areas that were traditionally farmland. And the developers at that time were the ones that determined where growth was going to occur in the city, which should not have happened. So for me, I vow not to allow that to occur again. However, I do believe we have to have growth, and it needs to be controlled growth and smart growth. And since this is within our sphere of influence, I want us to be the ones who determine how we grow, how fast we grow, and what are we going to develop within that area. But I'll just say this, for example, on the research and development side, we are running out of land. in the city of Fresno for that. The state of California has about 7.5% suitable land available for that type of development. Visalia has 17% available. City of Fresno has just 5%. And so we have to have a plan going forward that will allow us to open up areas for this type of development. And if you look at our industrial development areas in the city of Fresno, whether it's Palm Bluffs is full, 99 over north of Bullard, full. The area over there by Palm Lakes is has no freeway access. The areas that are further south by Orange, that is being protested by the environmental justice folks. So there really isn't very much land available to do large swaths of industrial development in our city. So this is an ideal location for that if we want to remain competitive. Otherwise, we lose folks to Visalia. And in terms of the housing development, the more housing you have, the more competitive it becomes in terms of keeping the mortgages stabilized, rent stabilized. What's happened in the city of Fresno is that the demand for housing has exceeded our supply, which is why we've seen rents skyrocket and house mortgage cost skyrocket. And we've also seen an increased number of housing projects in Clovis as well as Madera. In fact, right now, Madera is slated to have some over 11,000 units built north of the river. Those people would traditionally live in Fresno, and most of those people, the vast majority of them, work in Fresno. So the amount of vehicle miles traveled for them to get from Madera to Fresno is excessive, creates congestion, creates emissions, pollutants. So what I'm trying to do is create a job center south of Jensen and nearby housing so people don't have to commute so far. So we have to remain competitive. And if we don't grow, we will die. And I am a firm belief, I think we've proven it, that you can't dictate where developers are going to build and you can't dictate where people are going to live. Whether right. people want to own a home or rent a home, they want to live in downtown or they want to live on Blackstone or they want to live in other parts of the city. We have to give them a variety of options so that they don't move to Madera or Visalia or Kerman or Sanger. And that's what I'm trying to do.
This project, SEDA as a whole, not just South SEDA, but SEDA sure. as a whole, is looking at what we said earlier, 9,000 acres, and trying to build for 145,000 new residents. Is that fair to say?
Total build out, maybe over 50 years. Or mm-hmm. 60 years, mm-hmm. and much of SEDA, of that 9,000, like the middle part of SEDA, the vast majority of the people that are coming to council don't live in the city. They live in that central SEDA area, may never get developed, quite frankly. It may never get developed. Mm-hmm. You may only see into the north SEDA and south SEDA. And so what I'm willing to do, and I've told folks, is that in order to give a comfort level to people to say, well, we don't want to see this just being a foot in the door, I'm willing to say we open up South SEDA, and then there has to be thresholds put in place to go beyond that area. Maybe you have to have 70% of the housing complete before you venture out beyond that, or maybe it's a voter referendum that has to occur, go to the vote of the people before you expand, or perhaps you just have to do another environmental impact study to go beyond the initial area. But what I do know is we have to, the first step is to get the environmental impact report approved for all 9,000 acres. We don't have a choice of just doing an environmental impact report for the 2,000 acres in the south because that is called piecemealing. It's against the law. So we have to do all 9,000 acres, or I would have already taken that approach. I would have just said, we'll just do the 2,000 acres and call it good. But we can't. It's unlawful.
So you're looking at it as a whole, but taking the actions sort of
in phases. In controlled phases where there are certain thresholds that have to be met before you go beyond.
Because I think a lot of the concerns that I've heard brought up is that, you know, we're planning to build a lot more homes than what our projected population is going to be.
Right. Yeah. And that's we need to make sure that we don't do that for a lot of reasons, because we don't want to do what we've done in the past, repeat the sins of the past. And I'm still promoting the infill housing. There hasn't been another mayor that's done as much infill housing as I have. When I became the mayor, there was no housing on Blackstone. Today, we have like seven housing developments on Blackstone. We're doing housing downtown. We're just now doing the South Stadium project, which is 8 stories. We're doing one up on Tuolumne and Fulton called the Ruse. We have one being developed at the Helm Building downtown. So we're doing a lot of infill housing. In fact, back in 2014, when the general plan was being developed, there was a goal that was established at that time, mutually agreed upon goal, that from that point forward, we would do 50% development in the infill and 50% in new growth area. Since that time, we have done 76% on the infill and only 24% on the growth area. So the truth is we need to provide a variety or a menu of options for people to determine where to live. Otherwise, they're going to Madera.
So the numbers that I'm seeing being popped up that this will cost $4 billion and leave a deficit of up to $3 billion. What are your thoughts on that? How are you pushing back on that? Do you agree, or is that what your projections are showing at all?
Oh, it's not true to begin with. $3.5 billion would be for perhaps 9,000 acres, total build out, paid for by the developer, not the city, not the ratepayers. We only pay for the initial, and that is taken out of developer fees and paid for. It's not paid for by the ratepayers. It's not paid for by taxpayers. Is paid for by developers, and they pass those costs on to the people that are buying those homes or to the businesses within those areas. So I think that was a scare tactic. It was an uninformed bit of information that was unfortunately put out there. And then every media outlet ran with it, and pretty soon it became urban legend. It was the truth, and it's not. It's not even close to the truth. The numbers I gave you is based on this study right here, which is the Southeast Development Area Specific Plan, Public Facilities Financing Options. And I have all of the costs broken down by phases, by water, by sewer, by main, by transportation, all of those things, potable water, recycled water. So we have the data and the study, and so we have shown that.
Okay, so if the developers are going to be taking on a bulk of the costs, you know,
all the costs, right.
City up front with some,
right.
That means they're going to probably factor in that they're going to make that money back. Is that going to happen with industrial development, with, you know, single family homes, or are we talking more homes, bigger price tags?
Well, what you're going to see under the, in terms of the homes itself, those areas have increased density. What that means is you're going to have more homes per acre than normal. When you have more homes per acre, the lot size are smaller. That means the cost of the housing is less. And generally, you're going to build houses that are comfortable but not exorbitant. And that makes it affordable as well. You know what I really want is to be able to provide housing in Fresno for our children who grow up here, who oftentimes can't afford to buy a home. We see that today. People aren't buying their homes till they're in their late 30s and 40s. And that's a lot of wealth lost by the people in Fresno. We need to be able to give people opportunities through good paying jobs and home ownership, an opportunity to own their own home when they're in their 20s. And they can build wealth over the period of their lifetime, build equity in a home instead of paying rent. And for those who want to pay rent, you can still pay rent. But we need to give home ownership opportunities for people in our city. And if we stop growing, we won't be able to do that.
I heard that a lot, that need for more housing and more building in the city from a lot of school districts here in Fresno, Central Unified and Fresno Unified specifically. A lot of people got up to talk, you know, to ask, why aren't we investing more in our neighborhoods? Why aren't we building homes down the street from me? Why are we focusing somewhere that is not even close to me, that might actually pull resources? How would you respond to that?
I would say just go west of the 99 and look around. There are thousands and thousands of homes that have been built over the last 7 years to where sometimes it's unrecognizable. And that is why we built 2 more high schools out there, Central Unified, you have Central East, and you're building more middle schools out there. It is exploding west of the 99 and will continue to do so because there's a demand to live there. But there's also a demand to live other places in Fresno. And if we don't provide those, as I said, they're going to go to other parts of the county or outside of the county like Madera. So those neighborhoods are continuing to be developed. And when I hear people say, why aren't you investing in our neighborhood? We are. We're doing 100 lane miles of paving this year, more paving than we've done in the history of our city, thanks to a $100 million paving bond called Pave More Now, Pay Less Later. We're fixing sidewalks. We're trimming trees. When I became the mayor, we had no tree trimming, proactive tree trimming budget. Today, we're at $3.3 million every year we're doing on tree trimming. So I can't understand why people say we're not investing, but I can tell you that it's also the responsibility of the schools when they develop that they put in sidewalks, that they have safe routes to schools, and to not put that back on the city of Fresno. Because whenever schools are developed in the county and then eventually they're annexed into the city, historically, we're the ones that have to come in, fix the roads, put in sidewalks, put in all of the infrastructure with city taxpayer dollars. And that should fall upon the school districts, whether Central Unified or Fresno Unified.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about school districts.
Sure.
and how SEDA might impact that. A lot of the project focuses, if we are going to be building out there in these decades to come, pouring a lot of resources that will drive people into Clovis Unified and Sanger Unified. How do you respond to that? Where does that leave places like Fresno Unified?
Well, if you look today, 50% of all of Clovis Unified lives in the city of Fresno. That trend started a long time ago whenever they drew geographical boundaries for the Clovis Unified School District all the way north Fresno and to the west. And that's the way the school district boundaries have been developed and built. And so I will say this, if you look at Central Unified and you look at how many students are in Central Unified today, not one person in the Fresno Unified School District ever complained about us developing in Northwest Fresno and building two high schools out there that are not Fresno Unified. They're Central. What is the difference between Central Unified being developed and Sanger Unified being developed? They're both into Fresno County.
And you're saying that either way, it's schools?
It's schools. It's Fresno County schools. And what I would say to folks in Fresno Unified, do a better job of educating students. We just got the recent test scores, and they were horrendous. The number of people that cannot read at grade level, the number of people that cannot do math. It is a sad state to see what's happening to our students. And then you look at Sanger Unified. Sanger Unified is leading the state in education test scores with reading and math. So I just say do a better job. And if you're a competitive school like Clovis, Sanger Unified, even Central to a degree, you're going to be able to attract and retain students. SEDA has not even gotten close to opening any part of it. And Fresno Unified has lost thousands of students. Why? Because parents have chosen to take their kids to Clovis Unified School District, to Sanger Unified School District, inter-district transfers, and people are putting their kids in private schools and charter schools throughout Fresno. So this is not a SEDA thing. What they need to do is look internally, improve their educational system, and by that, they'll attract and retain students.
I want to go to a story that was recently reported about a vote that the Fresno Unified School District was going to take on a resolution to oppose SEDA. This was back in February. And the report showed some text messages that you sent to some board members.
Yes.
Can we talk about that? Why did it matter to you how they voted? If you're saying it doesn't affect SEDA, doesn't affect their performance.
Because I knew that they were, I had just learned in the 11th hour that they were going to take a position or at least consider a position of Fresno Unified School Board on the Southeast Development Area that they had very little knowledge of. In fact, they weren't even operating off of the current information in terms of what plan we were actually studying, South SEDA. In fact, they thought we were opening up SEDA to increase the student body at Clovis. We weren't. And traditionally, there's been an understanding or agreement between the city of Fresno and the school districts. We really support each other. we stay in each other's lanes. I don't go out and say, criticize their educational system and haven't ever. I've been there to support them through our Police Activities League, through our school resource officers. We've had a great partnership over the years, but it hasn't been until this time where the school board chose to place themselves into a City of Fresno matter on a land use matter that caused me to be concerned. And so I sent what I felt to be a friendly text message stating that and offering up to each and every one of them, if they wanted to meet with me, I'd be more than happy to sit down and share with them what SEDA is, what it's not, and why we're doing this, and hopefully to alleviate their concerns. Now, I did meet with Misty Herr. Mm-hmm. I met with some of her top folks, and when they left my office, they had a better understanding. Well, no one from Fresno Unified School District School Board or Central Unified School Board has taken the time to do that. And so they're basing information. I can tell you one Central Unified School Board member, when he was made aware after the fact of what SEDA was, he said, I didn't know that. I thought we were voting on something else. You know, the whole 9,000 acres. Well, that's not what I'm intending to open. So I just think misinformation, and I was hoping to clarify that with him and wasn't able to.
So before I let you go, Mayor Dyer, you know, we've covered a lot now.
Yes, we have.
On SEDA, you know, you're in your second term.
Yes.
And your last term as mayor, your time in office ends in 2029. So we are right now facing major strains on water resources, on our agricultural industry. There's a lot of uncertainty in our economy, in our politics. Where do you see Fresno in the next 5 or 10 years? This project, you know, aside.
Well, I think the future of Fresno is going to largely depend on the decisions we make today, whether that's on opening up the SEDA for growth or getting a transportation measure passed, which I support, the Better Roads, Safe Streets measure. We need that if we're going to continue to fix our $1.3 billion in deferred maintenance and $300 million in deferred sidewalk repair. We're also going to need to make sure that we have water rates and wastewater rates that stay consistent. We haven't had a rate increase for almost 15 years. And now we're starting to get into the red in that arena. And when that happens, we start impacting future services. And if we don't do the things today that are going to make sure we continue with good revenue, then we're not going to have a healthy city. So those are the things that are very, very important. Things that I'm very focused on is downtown. We you know, great cities have great downtowns. We need housing downtown. We need vibrancy. We put in almost $300 million of infrastructure in downtown so that we can accelerate housing. So we just got to continue to do the things that help us to grow, to build. And when we stop growing, we die as a city. And we got to be careful not to do that. We got to be smart about how we grow. Got to be fiscally conservative. We got to keep our reserve where it is. You know, we have the highest credit rating in our history. We need to make good, smart choices on how we spend money, and that will continue to be the case. And when we have a good credit history, we're able to bond money and borrow money cheaper, which saves taxpayer dollars.
Fresno Mayor Jerry Dyer, thanks for taking the time to discuss this with us.
It's been my honor. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll continue to follow this issue on the podcast. On Monday, we'll hear from the opposing side of SEDA, addressing the biggest concerns from community representatives. And that's today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Sarith Hawk. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
Each story you hear on Planet Money starts with a question. What happens if we refund tariffs? Why are groceries so expensive? At NPR, we stand for your right to be curious, because the forces shaping our world can be hard to see. Follow NPR's Planet Money wherever you get your podcasts and start seeing how the economy really works.